Sarah Rathbone is back with us for this segment, but also we are welcoming on the phone. She's with the Port of San Diego, program manager for the Aquaculture and Blue Tech program. She's got a master's from the University of Stirling in Scotland in aquaculture, and she's a former research fish biologist at NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and it's Paula Sylvia. Paula, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. And then also in studio, we have with us another marine biologist with Southwest Fisheries Science Center in NOAA. And also an expert in tuna and migratory species. She's got her doctorate, PhD, in marine biology from Scripps Institution of Oceanography, Heidi Dewar. How are you, Heidi?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Outstanding. Well, Michelle, you got some real heavyweights for this segment.
Lots of science here in the house right now.
Yes.
Those liberal artsers are getting a little bit intimidated. Look, earlier you were asking about the laws that are in place, and and one of them that we talked about briefly, you know, sort of sets in place the kind of statistics and the oversight and the research that certainly Heidi works on and everyone sitting here right now is knowledgeable about. So tell us a little bit about what do we do in this country in terms of making sure that our fish population is attended to?
The U.S. probably has some of the most strict fisheries management laws in the world, actually, and that's sort of borne out by some of the comparisons that are made internationally about how we're doing as far as management goes. But we've got the Magnuson-Stevenson Act, which is a fisheries act. There's the Endangered Species Act. There's the Marine Mammal Protection Act. There's the Migratory Bird Act. There are a lot of different regulatory bodies that sort of watch over our management processes. And at the Southwest Fisheries Science Center, there are different groups. And at most of the science centers, you'd have people who do the stock assessments, so take all the catch data and the larval data and try to figure out if fish are being overfished. And then you have people like myself who try to feed data into those stock assessments, looking at, you know, how old fish are, where they're going, what their stock structure is. And then we're also trying to move towards ecosystem management. And for that, you really need to have connections between species. So we're also doing things like looking at foraging ecology to figure out who's eating whom, how many, and how that changes in different environmental conditions.
Wow. What are the major concerns that are out there today?
For the U.S., we're doing a pretty good job, actually, of managing the fisheries. We've got, you know, 80 to 90% of our stocks are in good health. The biggest concern, I would probably say, is climate change, because there are some pretty extreme projected changes in the North Pacific, ranging from temperature to reductions in pH, which will go way beyond impacting just the fish that we think about to impacting, bivalves like oysters, clams, those sorts of things, even to the phytoplankton levels.
I think it's really important to note, too, the average consumer doesn't realize that climate change is not sort of a future apocalyptic scene where, you know, you have like a scene from Deep Impact and all of our cities are along the coast are flooded. We're talking about things that are currently happening.
Yes.
And that are currently having a huge effect on the type of fish species we see, their abundance in the ocean, and our ability to adapt to such a drastically changing ocean is being challenged for sure.
It's funny because we've sort of been talking about fishing and its effect on the environment, and we haven't so much been talking about the effect of the changing environment on the fish population. And and I'm so glad that you raised that, because we have to sort of think of it from both sides, because one is happening, one we're trying to manage, and the other one is already upon us, you know. And there's something we haven't brought up, and I'm glad that Paula's on the phone. We've been talking about, look, you know, there are more and more people on the planet. We understand the growth that's expected, and we know how much fish is being consumed and where we are in terms of how much more we can get out of the ocean safely and appropriately. And then the question is, where is the additional growth going to come from? And Paula, that sounds like a cue for you.
Yes. So we know that in the U.S., well, globally, but if you bring it down to the U.S. level, you know, we import 91% of the seafood that we eat. 50% of that comes from aquaculture operations. So our biggest, you know, need is trying to fill gaps in our own domestic seafood supply for food security reasons and for other reasons. So aquaculture is, you know, increasingly playing a larger role in being able to either, be used to support replenishing wild fisheries or to grow food directly for food consumption.
Now, Paula, I think I talked to you about this before, but there was a global aquaculture group that did a survey, a consumer survey, showed that 88% of consumers had a positive view of wild seafood, but only 15% preferred farmed. Okay, so let me ask you something. Is that fair? Does farmed fish get a bad rap? And if so, why? Is some deserved, undeserved? Give us the lowdown.
Well, I think there's a lot more, you know, our aquaculture industry in the United States is small compared to other regions in the world. And so there's less awareness from that standpoint, just from an industry perspective, trying to get its voice out there. But yeah, certainly as an aquaculture person, you know, I feel like there's a lot more positive information that could be relayed out there to complement, you know, the wild fisheries piece.
Mm-hmm. Did you help out, Paula, with the dockside program down in San Diego where we can get fresh fish every weekend now, right off the boats?
Yeah, the Port of San Diego is part of that program as well, and helped get it started with the range of fishermen that operate at the docks there. So we support it, and we think it's a great idea, and hopefully it's a growing idea.
I got to tell you, I was at an organization recently, a gathering of lots of local NGOs focused on food and the environment. And a proposal was set forth where they'd like to see that open 7 days a week, you know, 9 to 5 instead of one day, half a day. And I have to say that's a good idea. I hope that's something you can help make happen.
Yeah, we would be very supportive of that.
Outstanding. Well, let's see what else can we cover here.
I do want to go back, and you gave us a quick overview, Paula, but about aquaculture again, because it's kind of the first time it's really come up. We've talked more about wild cod and fish and ocean fish. But really just, you know, for example, we've read about, population migration. We've read about fish feed. We've read about pollution. I mean, these have been and can be problems, but there are also solutions, right? And tell us about that. How could we do it here if in the United States, who ranks, 15th in the world in terms of production, if we were going to do more, how can we do it right? How can we do it in compliance with the laws that we have in place?
Yeah. Well, first off, we already do it here with compliance with the laws that we have in place. We just don't do enough of it. So the most visible regions where we do, you know, fish farming in marine waters or, you know, aquaculture, offshore aquaculture, is with the salmon industry in the states of Washington and Maine, which are, you know, from an environmental perspective, the most heavily regulated marine fish farming operations in the world. So we have really good laws and environmental laws in place to advance it forward in other regions like Southern California, where we have clearly the largest opportunity to develop aquaculture, primarily because of our climate and our species selection and our proximity to markets. So we have a huge opportunity here. It's about, you know, trying to, you know, make the regulations be a little bit more clear to allow folks to you know, come in and operate businesses. And then there's a lot of sustainability standards out there that are adopted globally for all kinds of aquaculture practices. So, you know, using them in conjunction with our own and, you know, using best management practices to support our emerging industries is not a difficult thing to do, and it's something that we can show in a stepwise process that we can be really responsible here and come in more than ever be in compliance with, you know, the rules we already have and go beyond that.
And is there opportunity here? Because as Tommy mentioned earlier, we're dealing with a declining, you know, growth rate in terms of fishermen. And, you know, is there opportunity here for fishermen in aquaculture? And
I think actually that's something I've heard a lot of our coastal communities talking about. And I'm so glad that you bring it up, Paula, is that we are similar to how heavily regulated our wild fisheries are. Our aquaculture industry is also under those same types of stringent regulations, and it actually limits our ability to start up more sustainably minded aquaculture products or aquaculture operations, I should say, which really leads us to rely on under-regulated, unreported, and often illegal aquaculture imports as opposed to sort of growing that industry here domestically.
So the irony is then that if we are trying to be environmentally conscious, then we're forced to buy
Oh my gosh.
Ah!